You're listening to the Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silvering. MahoganySilvering.net. Wolf Daddy, a paranormal BDSM romance by Mahogany Silvering. Keiko Reed finds what she never expects in the arms of a werewolf daddy Dom, an alpha of the Wolf's House MC. Fleeing her abusive ex from a rival MC, she runs into Gerald Brothers. He takes her under his protection and believes she is the one that he has been searching for. He claims her in every way and gives her the sacred bite of the werewolf. Soon after, he is betrayed by a club member to the rival MC, putting not only Keiko, but the club and the small town of Golden Tip, Colorado at risk. Will Gerald go to war with the rival MC, risking everything for his precious little one? Wolf Daddy, a paranormal BDSM romance by Mahogany Silvery. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today. With the death of her vampire mate, Dominique Leroy, the hybrid vampire queen of New Orleans, must choose a new mate. Will it be the best friend, Asmodeus, the vampire who craves her power? Azazel, the human wizard with firepower, or Jason, her were-leopard guardian. With her ties to the magical and shifter communities, she becomes a threat to the Vampire Blood Council. They give her an ultimatum. Turn the human wizard into a vampire or die a traitor's death. Will she choose love or loyalty? The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street by Mahogany Silvering. Available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. Get your copy today. For joining me on the Mahogany Says Show. I am your host, Mahogany Silvering, and due to scheduling glitches, a last-minute cancellation, but so next time we will schedule for Taisha and Danae. Well, as I say, the show must go on, so let's go ahead, and I'm going to do some reading from the book, The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street. So we'll do a live feed, even though it's a different schedule, but I'm sure you guys won't mind. And we're live, so that's what we're going to do. This is the last show for the month of October, and we are celebrating Halloween this weekend. So here is chapter 22 of The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street. By me, Mahogany Silvering, High King Shango of Haiti. A week passes with no word from Azazel. He doesn't come to the club and doesn't return any of my calls. I really don't expect him to. I just hope somewhere and somehow he would call. He even blocked our psychic link, which only drives me more insane with worry, hurt, and disappointment. The club is now busier than ever, and vampires are coming in and from all over. Most are candidates for me to choose from, and with Azazel's withdrawal, I just know he's decided not to return to me. With Jason, well, I called in some extra help from the were-leopards. With Jason Asmodeus at my side, I can conduct a type of interview of the prospective vampire mates each week. Malachar brings in vampires from his warrior clan to increase the security at the club. Jason has also called in some extra were-leopards. I begin well, increasingly withdrawn. Something to do about spending my nights alone in bed while Jason silently keeps watch over me. Jason tries, but he can't seem to bring me out of my melancholy mood. I meet Asmodee's attempts at comfort with hostility, mostly because he is to blame for Azazel's disappearance in the first place. If only he hadn't written that note. Not that it matters much now, anyway. Anar came to visit me after a phone call from Asmodeus, who swallows his pride and begs her to come and help cheer me up. Though she'll always be this angry with him because he tried to mindfuck her. She concedes to come a week early before the ball to help me. She seriously didn't consider the fact that I could actually be in love with Azazel. She would also find it difficult to believe that anyone would refuse so vehemently to be something as wonderful as a vampire. I was sitting comfortably in my office discussing the details of the upcoming ball with Asmodeus when she arrives. Am I interrupting anything? Anar smiles sweetly as she sticks her head through the office door. You're always a welcome interruption, mon ami. I get up to hug her. Asmodeus rolls his eyes, crossing his arms as he leans back against my desk. Even though he's asked her to come, seeing her still upsets him. I lean down to Anar, exposing my neck in the customary greeting of a vampire of high standing. Anar gently kisses my face, pulls me down, kissing my neck softly before giving me an open mouth kiss. Despite his dislike of Anar, watching the two of us kiss before him is causing a stir in his nether region. He licks his lips in anticipation. What is it, my dear? Is he giving you a hard time? Anar asks half-jokingly as she shoots a glance at Asmodeus, who turns away and ignores her despite his arousal. He is grateful for her help with me, but her presence still unnerves him. No, it's just something, it's something more serious. You know, how I chose Azazel as my mate? Anar suppresses a giggle, which I purposely ignore. Well, the council is demanding that I choose a vampire or sire him. But don't sire him. You will be hunted and killed. Only Azazel doesn't want that, doesn't want to be a vampire, and I'm forced to choose a pure blood. Anar's thoughts tell me Asmodeus left that part out when he spoke to her on the phone. He just told her that I had a fight with Azazel and he'd not return, hence my current state of depression. She cast an evil look at Asmodeus before returning her gaze to me. Oh, surely you weren't serious about this, Azazel fellow. I mean, if he were serious, darling, he wouldn't be gone now, and you could force him, you know, make him your slave. She laughs sweetly. Does she have to be so cavalier about mind control? I stand up looking down at Anar, filled with pain and hurt. I knew you wouldn't understand. I wouldn't force him to do anything because he doesn't want to. I don't want to enslave him. I love him too much for that, I reply. I rarely get upset with Anar at her usual teasing of me. I just wasn't in the mood for it. I know she truly cares for me and wouldn't purposely set out to hurt me. My power flows heatedly over her skin, slapping and stinging it. I didn't really want to hurt her. I just wanted her to realize how serious I truly am. Oh my, you are so beautiful and angry. Do sit, love. No, I'm not too tall. I'm only having a bit of fun. But really now, look at the predicament he's placed you in. Her voice softens as she gently guides me to sit down next to her on the couch. Enjoying the not-so-subtle stinging of my power on her skin. From what I've been told, this human, you and this human have a power over the other vampires. It makes you dangerous, love. And don't be foolish. Follow the council's orders. When and if the human returns, by all means, keep him as your lover. He's more than that to me, Anar, I protest. I'm sure he is, darling, but you must make a choice. You are a very special, powerful vampire. It would be such a shame to lose you. Though I would gladly fight the council with you. Anar looks deeply into my eyes. She truly means every word. Asmodeus stands up, growling, tired of Anar's angelic act. He almost prefers her sadistic side as opposed to this sickeningly sweet side of herself. She really should choose me. He hisses. Quiet, Asmodeus. Anar gestures as swatting a fly. She hugs me as she sneers at him, incensed that since he called her by the pet name that I gave him. I am not one of your subjects to be dismissed at your will, he growls, overcome with rage coupled with bitter disappointment at my refusal to become his. He moves to strike Anar. Enough! Or so help me, I'll banish you from my sight, I warn. Stepping up just in time, catching his hand in midair. My power stings his skin and my words cut him to the core. I can see it in his eyes. Would you really banish me after all these years? His face grows even more pale than usual, if that's possible, and more sullen. Just back off, Asmodi, please. Don't push me, I warn. I knew I wouldn't really do it, but I'm resenting the constant pressure from him. Asmodeus composes himself quickly and winks at us both as he jerks his hand away. As you wish, Mashari. One good thing I can say about Asmodeus is he knows when to back down with me. He smooths his white ruffled shirt and brushes off his black fitted brocade pants with matching jacket and left office looking at the door behind him. His eyes never leaving our angry faces. The heat of my power still fills the office, slapping against Anara's skin, raising a sweat along her spine, making her reel with sensations. I do love when you get angry, my darling. It excites me so. Anara can't help herself. She walks up to me. I blow out a deep breath. The tension in my body eases as I watch Anara saunter to me. But before she can reach me, I feel a stirring inside me. A loud sound rings out. A horn? Sounds like a ram's horn. Anar and I head quickly downstairs to find six scantily clad dancers, three male, three female, making their way to the dance floor. Several guards dressed in light-colored suits hold back the crowd. What's this? Who are they? I demand to know. A coffee-colored woman. Excuse me, a coffee-colored man came up to me and bows low. I am Ziri, counselor of the High King Vampire Shango of Haiti. The king is here to offer you his hand in marriage. Ziri bows again and steps aside as human males holding drums and other instruments position themselves on stage, pushing aside the stunned band that was... playing moments before. Everyone seems too stunned to move and as if they are waiting for the show that will soon follow. Jason stares blankly from the bar as does Asmodeus, who sits on a stool across from Jason. Anar and I take a seat at the bar near Asmodeus, curious to see who this high king is. I have only heard of him, this Haitian king, but I've never met him before. Such pomp and circumstance is unnecessary, not to mention ridiculous, but then I could really use a good laugh. If the man is determined to put on a show, then so be it. Maybe the club patrons will enjoy it as well. I have to hand it to him, though. This is the most outrageous display from any of the vampires I've visited here in the last couple of weeks. The dancers dance to the beat of the drums, wildly and seductively, breaking into three pairs of two. Male and female, they gyrate against each other in a sensual heat. They are very good, stirring the passions of everyone in the room, vampire and human alike. Their costumes barely covering their bronze bodies as they pulse to an ever-quickening beat. When the beat finally comes to a stop, a tall, somber-looking man walks up to me. I can tell by the way he walks. His chin tilted up in arrogance, that this is the king. I read his thoughts immediately. Shango, like the voodoo god he claims to be, is the fourth king of Yoruba, who has been deified after his death. His mortal death before he became a vampire. The Afro bloodline sired him. And when he was in his early 30s, and he is now several centuries old, he is the embodiment of all things male, muscles, strength, hardness, arrogance with a smoldering, passionate look, and a power that calls out to the heavens. He can command lightning with his hands. The problem is, I don't think he's quite mastered it. His temper causes more trouble for him, and he is served and honored by those who truly fear him. Not so much of his wrath, but for his inability to hold and yield his power correctly, inadvertently destroying whole villages at the time. He thinks this is only a minor setback and is convinced that I can take him or give him the balance he needs. He actually believes that my blood and my body will surely give him the ultimate control of his power and mine. Oh, this is rich. There would be only room for one of us in that relationship. Him. He's definitely a no. He's quite full of himself, possessing high energy and inventive intelligence. His red suit stands out against his wonderfully dark skin. He wears his hair in a long twisted braid with attached cowrie shells down his back. White fangs sparkle in contrast to his deep set eyes, which are hazel edged in gold and green. His body is like a dancer, smooth, lithe, and yet very masculine. Around his neck is a necklace that has to weigh at least 3 pounds. It is made of alternating groups of six red beads and 6 white beads. There are 6 tassels all around it, making it made up of 10 strands of beads in red, and the center tassel is made of 20 strands of alternating red and white beads, housing a large pewter double axe in the center of his chest. Red and white are his favorite colors, something he hopes I will appreciate since I also love the color red. Shango thinks himself a true god because of his powers as a vampire and his ability to call thunder and lightning to his hands. He is also a hunter, his prowess unmatched in Haiti, or so I've heard. Though he possesses great skill and cunning, he is not a good king, taking all for himself and giving the people just enough to lull them into a false sense of security. He has many lovers, both human and vampire, but of all the high kings, he does not have any children. Unable to impregnate his lovers continuing their line, Shango wrongly assumes that since I am a rare mix of vampire and human, that I would be the one to make his dreams of an heir come true. Doesn't he realize that I don't have any children either? His thoughts give me the cheering up I needed. I silently gaze at him in utter amazement of his stupidity. He expects quite a bit from me. And he's not here to be interviewed like the potential candidates, but to claim me. So even though I would love to have him in my bed, once he's had me, he would just assume I was his and his alone. Damn, this one's gonna be trouble. I whisper telepathically to Jason, only to find that he already read the king's thoughts as well and has called in reinforcements. The were-leopards will soon be here. Way to go, Jason. With a gracious smile, I close the gap between me and the king, offering my neck to him in greeting. He breathes in my scent and lets his fangs scrape my neck a bit, spilling a few drops of blood, and that he quickly licks off me and savors. My blood, filled with energy and power, excites his senses and arouses him. Now he truly wants me for his queen. Sugar, honey, iced tea. I can barely conceal my outrage. I can honestly say that not one vampire has ever tasted my blood during a formal greeting. I'm insulted that he has the audacity to do so. However, he outranks me. I have little to say about how he greets. I want to bleed him dry where he stands. Though he's very handsome, his attitude leaves little to be desired. He wants power and children from me. Power I can give him. But I've never had children, and there is no way I would ever want children with this vampire, even if I could. He is becoming desperate, knowing that others will challenge him for his position if he does not produce an heir soon. I shudder to think what would happen to me if I didn't produce an heir for him. His self-serving way leaves me cold. I know I must choose someone soon, or more vampires like him will come for me. Ashe, Lady Dominique. I offer you the chance to be not only my High Queen, but a goddess as well. Many will worship and adore you. Come and rule Haiti with me as my queen. His voice is deep and strong with an air of seduction, but I am not moved. Anar squirms in her seat. She would love to get a hold of Shango, who is beautiful and strong. She wet herself just thinking of how she could break him, making him her slave. She may even fuck him, at least once. I laugh unexpectedly hearing her thoughts and feeling her arousal. I forgot momentarily that I stood in front of the Haitian vampire king. I cover my mouth quickly as Shango scowls. You think my offer of being a goddess is laughable, child? He roars. Someone takes themselves too seriously. Jason moves swiftly onto the bar, ready to pounce. As the other werelefers he calls slowly made their way, stealthily surrounding Shango's guards along with Malachar's warriors. They are set to strike as the tension between me and Shango fills the room. You must forgive me. I mean no disrespect, High King Shango. I tend to laugh when I'm nervous, and your presence overwhelms me so, I flirted. Shango's face softens. I understand that, and that cannot be helped, but I will try to tone it down for you. I have heard much about you. Your powers are amazing. Why do some men always seem to fall for that dumb female act? Especially one coupled with a compliment. I thank you, High King Shango. I take that as a high compliment coming from you. So, what is your answer? We can leave here tomorrow for a full celebration upon our return to Haiti. You honor me, great king. Only I have already chosen someone and he has accepted. I will make that announcement at the Halloween ball, I lied. I was not made aware of this. Do not exchange blood. Surely I could tell if you had. Who is this person? Who is he? Why is he not here with you? He demands, quite frankly, as he frantically scans the room. I've only just decided earlier today, and like I said, I will make this announcement official on Halloween night. The best I can do is lie for now. I had to come up with something. I knew I couldn't flatly refuse him without an explanation, and I wasn't sure mind control would actually work on such a powerful vampire. I didn't dare try it, not with this big of an audience. Word would get back to the council of my new power. I'm already in it pretty thick with them as it is. Where is this vampire? He sneers. Malachi suddenly stands next to me before the king, with Jason coming up on the other side. I believe our queen has spoken, Your Majesty. She has decided, and there is no reason for you to question her. You dare stand before me, Shango rages. Are you the one she has chosen? You are not a master of this place, and I am High King. I can sense that she has not exchanged blood with you. I can take her if I so choose. You can try. Malachar informs him, fangs flashing. Jason growls a low and steady growl. His fangs flash, and a thin line of silky dark fur appears on his neck. High King or not, Shango is in my territory. Threats to the vampire king or queen are a no-no. An electric energy rises within Shango, his eyes glowing white as his muscles bulge. His guards stand poised and ready, that is, until they felt sharp claws at each of their throats. The vampire king's men are surrounded by were-leopard and vampire warriors. Lightning flashes from Shango's eyes as they are now completely white, giving him the appearance of a blind man. I will burn this place to the ground if your queen does not agree with to be mine. Some vampires can be so dramatic at times. Has no one ever told this idiot no before? Out of nowhere, I hear a warning yell in my mind. Back up now. Everyone in the club must have heard it as well because they all step back from Shango. Jason and I take a few steps back as I pull Malachar with us. He's confused as to why we're backing away, but he complies without a struggle. Everyone, including Shango's men, all back away from the irate king. That's it. Cower before me. The voodoo god Shango. His voice booms as he rose with his in his own power. Sparks flying as he levitates a few inches off the floor. Lord Kevmorn suddenly steps in front of me, his wand pointing at the axe on Shango's chest. He has been invisible up until this point. Shango's power surges from out of his hands toward the very nervous vampires and human in the room, when suddenly the axe on his necklace turns into silver, drawing his powers back into himself. No! He bellows, before he is electrocuted and burned to a crisp in the center of the dance floor. Lord Kevmorn lowers his wand. The axe on Shango's blackened chest changes back to pewter. Killing a vampire outright is against the law. However, killing one in defense of others is legal, and Lord Kevmorn has plenty of grateful witnesses. Shango's guards, released by the were-leopards, rush to him. Ziri, Shango's counselor, scurries over and bows low before me. Forgive us, Lady Dominique, he cries. Please, have mercy. Do not punish us for what our master tried to do. I know full well I'm within my rights to destroy them all for Shango's attempt on our lives, but I figure they've suffered enough just having him as their king. You may rise, Ziri, I said coolly. I will not harm you or those in your charge. But tell me, who will replace your king? Ziri stood to his feet. Thank you, my queen. Perhaps Shango's brother, Lukai, will take his place. He is next in line. He is beloved by the people, but he has no match for Shango and would not challenge the brother he dearly loves. Only his family could love a man like Shango, but then maybe they only tolerate him because he was family. Then take what's left of your king. Go home with my blessing. You are a credit to the city, and any vampire is lucky to have you as his mate. Ziri smiles before rushing off, shouting orders at the guards and dancers that come with him. And what vampire would that be, Shetty? Asmodeus touches my shoulder. He just doesn't stop, does he? Surely he knew I lied to Shango about that. I pull away from him and extend my hand to Lord Kevmorn, who stands silently watching as everyone went back to what they were doing as if nothing had happened at all. It was like they didn't see him, completely ignoring him. You think they would at least show some gratitude, but then maybe Lord Kevmorn has done something to them, or maybe he's just invisible to only them. But I, for one, am very grateful. Thank you, Lord Kevmorn. What are you doing here? He told me briefly how he'd been warned by Lady Therizel that I would have need of him tonight. Since Azazel has been away ignoring my calls, I naturally assumed the magical community had also withdrawn from me. Seeing Lord Kevmorn here gives me hope that maybe all is not lost, and maybe even as far as Azazel is concerned. We made a treaty with you, Lady Dominique. We will be here whenever you need us. He smiles. A feeling of relief washes over me. Shango could have destroyed everyone in the club tonight, including me. I wanted to hug the wizard, but I wasn't sure if it would. When suddenly, he pulls me into his arms, hugging me, kissing the top of my head. That does it. The tears flow, and as powerful as I am, I had been truly afraid this time. I'm a vampire, but I'm not invincible or truly immortal. They can kill me. When I open my eyes, we are in my office. I'd gasp as I look around. I feel a little dizzy, but otherwise, okay. Lord, can you just transport us here? I thought perhaps privacy is what you need now. He laughs. Thank you. Yes, I did. I can barely focus my eyes on him when I hear Jason in my mind. Where you at, Chef? You all right? I'm in my office and yes, I'm fine now. Okay, I'm on my way. My sweet baby, all will be as it should, my lady. Don't worry about young Zazel. Our allegiance does not depend on whether you two date. It never did, Lord Kevlin assures me. Zazel is a half-mortal and doesn't always see the bigger picture, but he will. Lord Kevlin's eyes sparkle, and I feel better than I have in weeks. Thank you again. Is there something I can do for you to show you just how grateful I am? Well, how about you let me and my wife attend your Halloween ball? You got it. Who's your wife? I'm curious, and I knew it wasn't Lady Therizel because she lives alone. I figured his wife is someone like Lady Therizel. Oh, you've met her? Lady Mahogany, or rather, Demetra. I was sure she told you. He grins. My mouth opens wide, a bit too wide. As far as Lord Kevlin chuckles. Demetra, the beautiful black witch with the power of earth, of course. She is the wife of Lord Kevlin, the High Wizard of the Wizard Council. I remember her from when she and two other witches visited the Blood Rose last month. Surprised much, she continues to laugh. I blush. Now it's his turn to be surprised. Vampires don't blush, but I do. We'll be back in a moment with more of the Grand Dame of Bourbon Street. Nadine is the owner of a successful bookstore in a college town. It's complicated is the best way to describe Nadine and the rumors about her being a witch. 25 years is a long time for a rumor to fester and grow. She can't control the rumor, but given half a chance, she can control you. Every year, she seems to take a new lover from the college. Tyler is a college senior who let his curiosity get the better of him. Determined to find out if Nadine is truly a witch, he applies for a job at her bookstore. He becomes her new lover and Nadine stirs something in him. He's experiencing things he never knew he was curious about. However, Nadine's past has come back to haunt her as ex-lovers suddenly reappear. Can she continue to have her fling with Tyler and control her past? The Bewitching Bookstore by Scarlett Thomas Wolfe. Available for pre-orders on Amazon. Releasing on October 28th. Order your copy today. With the death of her vampire mate, Dominique Leroy, the hybrid vampire queen of New Orleans, must choose a new mate. Will it be the best friend, Asmodeus, the vampire who craves her power? Azazel, the human wizard with firepower? Or Jason, her were-leopard guardian? With her ties to the magical and shifter communities, she becomes a threat to the Vampire Blood Council. They give her an ultimatum. Turn the human wizard into a vampire or die a traitor's death. Will she choose love or loyalty? The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street by Mahogany Silverrain. Available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. Get your copy today. You are listening to Mahogany Says with Mahogany Silverrain, and I'm doing a live read of The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street, the book one of the Dominique Leroy vampire series. I blush. Now it's his turn to be surprised. Vampires don't blush, but I do. She just seems so much younger than you. I never would have guessed. I know. We like it that way. We actually have a lot in common. We both come from a long line of wizards and witches. We can look any way we choose. She's actually a few centuries older than you. She prefers to blend in and not draw attention to her age. I have to look older for the council. I am the eldest wizard in this region. Put it this way, I knew Merlin. We studied under the same mage. He smiles warmly as his face changes. In seconds, he is younger looking. His white hair is now a rich dark brown with hints of red, and his beard the same dark color brown. The only lines in his face were smooth, and his eyes shone a bright steel gray blue. I'm impressed and marvel at the change. The eldest vampires I've ever met is on the Blood Council, and they are not as warm or quite as friendly as Lord Kevmorn. But then, vampires are not warm by nature or by temperature. How long have you been married? Over 200 years, his eyes sparkle. The look he has is one of your newly... is a newlywed man with the newness of that first stirrings of love and passion. I remember that look on Henri's face during our years together, especially those days before I became a vampire. Will I ever have that again? Though I loved Jason passionately and felt that way about him and felt that way about Azazel, no one compares to Henri. Asmodeus has even tried calling me by the same nickname Henri gave me, Beauté au Chocolat. It's not the same, and at that moment, I wish Henri was still here with me. Lord Kevmorn hugs me again, snapping me out of my deep thoughts of Henri. I'm a bit unnerved because someone else besides Jason can read my mind. I melt into that hug, like a daughter hugging her father. I now realize just how short my time had been with my parents, and once again, I'm grateful for Lord Kevmorn and Lady Therizel. Jason opens the office door suddenly, his face strewn in worry. The look changes to one of possession with a twinge of jealousy as he watches Lord Kevmorn hold me. I assure him telepathically that this hug is not something sexual and that he should be thankful to Lord Kevmorn for saving us all. I see that you're in good hands, so I just be downstairs. Jason's voice holds an edge to it that makes me pull away from Lord Kevmorn to look at him closely. Nonsense, my boy. Stay and comfort your woman. I need to return home, my wife made filet gumbo. Lord Kevmorn winks, and just like that, in a puff of smoke and a faint scent of cedar, he is gone. I wish I could do that. Jason turns back to me, closing the door behind him. I think I like him, Cher. Really? A second ago, you were jealous, I tease. No, just being protective of my woman. The man just saved all of our butts and you were being protective. Well, you could have had other motives. Wizards can be tricky, you know. He pokes me in the ribs playfully before scooping me up in his arms and kissing me softly. Are you really okay? Tonight was really something, yeah? Yes, but I thank the goddess for Lord Kevmorn, I whisper. I breathe into Jason's scent, and as I hugged him tightly, I just wanted him to hold me, though I felt his body and knew he wanted more, needed more. His body aches for me. I can sense it with my whole being. He shares his thoughts with me. He wants to put himself so deeply inside me that he becomes a part of me. He's missed me. Several nights now he spent on my couch, his member laying heavy with his need for me. He loves me and will wait for us, wait as long as I need. It was difficult being this close to me and not being inside of me, but he feels that this is what I want, then that is what he will do. He curses Azazel under his breath. He wants to be me to be my old self again and wishes Azazel would make up his damn mind already. I kiss Jason deeply, assuring him of my love for him. We leave the club, Jason and I, as Nellicar and Asmodeus close up. We drive in silence as I stare out the window. I block my thoughts from Jason as I sit thinking about him and Azazel. If I could sire Azazel, I would be content with the type, with the two of them, if Azazel returns. If he doesn't, I will have to choose Asmodeus. But he and Jason don't get along most of the time. It is difficult thinking that I have to marry someone I don't know or love. I wondered how vampires never really seem to marry for love. Is it all just politics or about gaining power? I try my best to be cold and calculating, like most vampires, but my heart yearns for more than that. I've had love with Henri, and I don't want to settle for anything less. To me, marriage is forever, whether it's to one person or more. How can I marry some stranger who is only interested in power? If I don't like them, I can just kill them. There is no divorce for vampires. It's funny how they consider divorce such a human thing, but not marriage. Loyalty counts to your vampire maker, your mate, and to the council. I've known no one who's divorced within the last century with Henri, or in the vampire community. Even after more than a century with Henri, I never tired of him, never considered leaving my marriage at all. Jason is more than a little hurt that I've blocked him from my mind, but he need not read my thoughts to know what I am thinking. He hadn't realized just how important Azazel had become to me. He thinks if he convinces Azazel to come back, the three of us can be happy together. He reaches over and caresses my cheek after turning off the engine to his blue late model Ford F-250. I turn to look at him and smile as I reach for him. We spend a moment or two looking into each other's eyes before the moment is broken by a thump on the truck window. Jason turns with a low growl to see Chauncey grin at him. His breath fog in the window. Man, you gotta get off your butt. Get off my truck, Jason growls. What are you here for? It's my night to guard the queen, Chauncey laughs. I get out of the truck with a groan. I had forgotten it was Chauncey's night. He's right, Jason. We don't have to go home. He's right, Jason. Why don't you go home and rest, okay? Jason gives me the desperate look and curses under his breath. He wishes at this moment that he'd never turned Chauncey. He wanted to be with me so badly, and the one night he thinks he's got a chance, here's Chauncey, cock-blocking. It's cool, Chauncey. Take off, man. I got it. Jason's voice is rough, edged with pain and need. Maybe Chauncey will get a cool. I'm already here, man. And you look like you need some rest, yeah? Chauncey enjoys teasing him, but his timing couldn't have been worse. I said I got it. Jason flares his fangs. This is getting ridiculous, and I'm not in the mood. Enough, I yell. You can both stay. I'm going to bed. I don't remember whose idea it was for them to hang with me in shifts, but after the night I've had, I didn't give a damn. I move quickly out of the parking lot and up the stairs to my condo. My speed has increased thanks to Jason. The guys move just as quickly behind me, nearly knocking each other over the stairwell, growling and hissing as they go. By the time they reach my doorway, both are flashing their canines, breathing heavily. I shake my head. Cats! I open the door, ignoring the fighting leopards, and head straight into my room where I strip down and plop on my bed. I didn't care if they followed me or not. I was going to shower and get some rest when I heard the two men talking in the other room. You sleeping with her, Chance? Jason demands. What? You going crazy, man. I don't believe this. What's gotten into you lately? It's not like you, brother. I know she's yours. Hell, your scent is all over. You ain't ever tried. I wouldn't do that to you. I'd ask first. I'm sorry, brother. I just worry about her. Man, I know you wouldn't do that. Forgive me. It's all right. I know how you feel about it. We all do. You're a lucky man. She your crazy Cajun ass, too. She loves you. Chauncey audibly pat Jason on the back. Been a while since you two, yeah, man. Jason cuts him off. He probably senses me listening. Man, you know you can always get released with my female vampire from the park. My females from the park. Chauncey suggests. No, I don't want nobody but her, yeah? Jason insists. Man, you got it bad, don't you? Jason let out a low growl. I'm just saying, Chauncey laughs. I'll keep watch while you sleep, Chauncey offers. All right, man. You just keep your butt out of her bedroom, yeah? Jason warns. Got it. Now get some sleep. Jason settled into the couch, wishing I had come out and took him into my bed. I sat in bed listening to his thoughts because I don't want to focus on my own right now. He's thinking of me and my scent fills his mind, making his body react. He tries unsuccessfully to relax enough to sleep. His number is hard and thick. He turns on his side to face the inside of the couch, heavy with need and longing for me. Should I go to him? I want to, but I hesitate because of Chauncey. No, it's not really Chauncey, and I don't mind an audience, but with the conversation they just had, Jason might. He deserves so much better. Someone who can give him the family he wants. What is wrong with me? I'm pining over a wizard who's obviously not going to return when there's a fine-looking young red leopard pining for me on my couch. My thoughts of Jason and his male hardness made my body long for him as well. I fight my sexual urges and force my thoughts to Azazel. What is he doing? I open my mind to him and find that he is sleeping, which means his mind is open. He's not blocking when he sleeps. Why didn't I think of this before? I discover that Azazel didn't mean to break his promise to see me. He just can't face me now. He thinks maybe he can make my decision easier by just removing himself from the picture. Oh, Azazel, why? I call to him softly in his dreams. Though he blocks my connection to him when he is awake, visions of me haunt him daily. A tear slips down my cheek as I listen to his thoughts and watch the flashes of pictures that stumble across his subconscious mind. He misses me, my touch, my laughter, my green eyes looking at him with such tenderness and understanding. He beats himself up for leaving me. Chapter 23. Azazel's Dilemma. Is being a vampire so bad that I would sacrifice the one woman who captured my heart, mind, body, and soul? What am I doing? She has more to lose than I do. What the hell is the matter with me? I realize, sadly, that he's suffering as much as I have for weeks, and throwing himself into work didn't do much to help him either. This is the reason I didn't even want to tell him in the first place. But still, he would have had to process this on his own. I can't do it for him. He seems everywhere he turns, he sees my face. The new secretary on the third floor at work. Every woman from the mother pushing her baby in the mall to the woman who serves him lattes at Starbucks. My face is on all of them. Azazel, just come back to me. I wish my thoughts to worry. I whisper my thoughts to him. He's even gone to Lord Cadmon for advice, only for the elderly wizard to tell him that he must listen to what his heart says. Azazel is a warrior, and he believes warriors don't listen to their hearts. They need only their strength and skill. I wonder if Malachar has this belief, since he is also a warrior. Somehow I doubt it. Azazel pictures in his mind the few times he's driven past the club and spotted me kissing Jason outside. He thinks I've moved on, obviously, since Jason and I looked so happy together. He also thinks Jason is a vampire. What gave him that idea? He wants to see me now and wonders if I'll even speak to him. Yes, Azazel, I will. The tears flow freely now from my eyes. He wants me to be happy and safe. He just can't bring himself to be turned into a vampire, what he thinks will be an eternal curse, the undead. He loves eating food, especially sweets like his favorite chocolate caramels, which reminds me of the smooth creaminess, or reminds him of the smooth creaminess of my skin. Vampires only drink blood. He loves me, but not the fact that I'm a vampire. He misses cuddling with me, kissing me, nuzzling my neck. My soft moans and growls when we make love. He assumes I've chosen Jason as my mate and that I'm going to meet the council's deadline after all. I sent him an invitation last month to the Halloween ball. I hope he comes anyway. He already bought a tuxedo after his younger sister insisted on it. Even his mother told him that opportunities for love don't come often and they don't always come in the way we think they should. So what if Dominique is a vampire, mijo? I want you to be happy. And if she makes you happy, you must fight for her, Dumpin. His mother kissed his forehead on his last visit. Home a few days ago. He loves our psychic connection, the power we share, and even the extra boost of power I give him when we make love. So what if it means he has to be a vampire? Many men would like to do that and more with the women they love. He reasons that he would just be the baddest kick-ass vampire out there, and there is an upside to this. If a vampire pisses them off, he can fight them on their own terms and not get in trouble for killing them. Sadly, this is not as true as he believes. Vampires have their own rules of engagement. He suddenly sees my face in his mind and senses my presence for real. He awakes with a start sitting up in his bed. Our connection instantly breaks. No. I tried to reconnect with him to find out his decision, but he's blocking again. I laugh despite my tears. My heart is no longer heavy, but I don't know if he will come to me or not. I whisper my thoughts to him. Please come back to me, my sweet Azazel. Chapter 24. Duchess Kiana, Vampire Queen of Mississippi. The morning is cool and breezy. I lay quietly in bed thinking over the last 30 days. I have not had any more dramatic vampires visiting from any of the cities or towns around me. I guess the word got out about poor Hiking Shango. Only the version on the street is that I defeated him. Maybe Lord Kepmon did something to the crowd to make them remember it that way. I think about vampire marriage and how upset I'd been with Asmodeus finally explained it to me. Even if I had known about the century mark marriage thing, I would have stayed married to Henri. No matter what. I wonder what else they conveniently forgot to tell me. No matter now, my thoughts drift to what happened a few nights ago. Asmodeus explained vampire marriage to me. The lesbian vampire queen of Mississippi, Diana, visited me. She's a smart beauty, standing at only 5'2", with thick legs, chiseled abs, and a small waist, with full, perky breasts that fit perfectly in the palm of your hand. Or so I imagined as I gazed into her smoldering amber-colored eyes. She is a member of the afterbloodline like me. The amber-eyed beauty has creamy chocolate brown skin that looks covered in black paint. Her clothing is that tight. The black latex catsuit she wears as her signature outfit is amazing. It has a V-neck that stops just above her navel, exposing her tight abs and the smooth curves of her breasts. I lick my already moist lips for more than once as the beautiful vampire queen approaches me, wearing black vinyl stiletto boots. Kiana, which means beautiful flower in Kisali, lives up to her name. She's beautiful and very sexy. She wears her straight black hair in an asymmetrical cut that hangs over her right eye and exposes her slender back and neck. She is immune to silver, like me, a power she's had as long as she can remember. She even wears a silver cuff on her left ear. Her bite is intoxicating to a victim, like a shot of morphine. They don't resist long, as if they resist at all. Initially, all of her victims, once bitten, float in a sea of warmth, and if they survive, their pleasure soon turns to madness. They crave her bite over and over, like a drug, which is one of the main reasons her donors have to spill their blood in a wine glass for her to drink. She doesn't want to kill every person she drinks, but just to keep them from becoming an addict. Very admirable on her part. She has a lover that has been around for a decade, but the female vampire is too clingy and insecure, which is why she has not made her a true mate. After hearing about the New Orleans vampire queen who can walk in the daylight, It intrigues Guyana even more so. It doesn't matter to Guyana that I'm not a lesbian. She wants to make me hers anyway. And that, dear listeners, was a few chapters of The Grand Dame of Bourbon Street, which is available on Amazon and Kindle and paperback. And I want to thank you for listening tonight, despite our impromptu show. And things happen, so I'm glad that you tuned in. If you have not, you can always listen again in syndication on Google Podcasts, or even come to the radio show, blogtalkradio.com. So I wish you peace, blessings, and love. Enjoy your spooky Halloween this weekend.
You've been listening to The Mahogany Says Show on Blog Talk Radio with host Mahogany Silverain at mahoganysilverain.net. Thank you and good night.